Covering the crew all season long on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Inning. Now live from American Family Field, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
11 walks. All right, and that's post-game show. We'll see you tomorrow. That's all there really is to say about this one. Brewers fall 11-3 to the Dodgers in a game that, quite frankly, wasn't even that close down the stretch. I mean, this was an entertaining game for seven innings, and then the walks finally caught up to the Brewers. And, you know, you can't give a team like the Dodgers 11 free passes and expect to win the game. And part of that was when the game was already in hand, though, too, as well. And pitchers that maybe you don't expect to pitch in a game that are in leverage, and they did not pitch in leverage at this point. But the point being, with Jerry Augustine, I'm Dom Catronio. We can sit here and talk about everything that happened in this game. The two things that, the only thing that matters, number one, they walked 11 batters. You're never going to win a game that you walk 11 batters as a pitching staff.
That's right.
And number two, they had, what, two hits after the first inning? You're not going to win games when you only score three runs in Major League Baseball.
And start off the game so well. But before we start and I get into it, I want to put a little shout out. The UWM Panthers won the 2026 Horizon League Champions.
Yeah, good for them.
So Coach Sean Wagner, congratulations.
What a turnaround.
I coached there for 11 years. It was a great time, but it's quite an honor to win that tournament. Now you get to go to the NC2 tournament. You're one of 64 teams that get to go in that tournament. It is really special. So congratulations, Coach Sean Wagner, Corey Bigler, and everybody. I know Coach Duffick's and I, Scott Duffick, did it several times when I was there, but it's pretty special. Good day.
They've had a handful of big leaguers the last couple of seasons as well,
they
so they certainly deserve the credit. So congrats to the Panthers. That's the only positive note here from Milwaukee baseball here on this Saturday night. But to the point of tonight's game, starting with the pitching staff, I think it's easy to overreact to this final score because it's the Dodgers and because of the revenge and all of this stuff. But I just sort of sit here and say, you know what? This is kind of what I expected when you say, and I don't want to be blunt, but look, Robert Gasser is trying to hang on to his spot in the big leagues right now. And then I look at Jake Woodford is trying to hang on to his spot in the big leagues right now. D.L. Hall, his number one Achilles heel all season long, has been his free passes. And Grant Anderson pitched very well today, and he gets overshadowed in all this too. But when you give up free passes to a team as talented as the Dodgers, they weren't going to be 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position tonight, that's for sure. And for a while, they were just 2-for-6, and then the floodgates opened in the eighth.
It was so interesting. You know, Gasser was throwing the ball so well, and the first time he faced Hernandez, he screwed him into the ground with a swing and a miss to strike him out. But the next time he got that pitch just a little bit over the plate, and when you take the pitch and you don't throw it where you're supposed to, you're going to make a mistake. And I thought where he made a couple mistakes tonight, as far as what Gasser did, he got a little bit throwing his sweeper too big. Mm. You know, sometimes you try to induce swings and misses and things like this. I thought when he threw maybe the slider style sweeper, it was a little bit better. He could get it, but this is a type of team that, like you just said, walks. And if you make mistakes over the middle plate, they're going to hurt you, and that's what happened tonight.
And the worst part of those two key mistakes in the fateful fourth inning for Robert Gasser, the Brewers were up 3-0 entering that fourth. He allowed an 0-2 double to Andy Pájez to score the first run, and then an 0-2 three-run homer to Teoscar Hernandez to give the Dodgers the lead that they would not relinquish. I mean, you could talk about the sweeper all you want, and there is such thing as throwing too many strikes on an 0-2 count, and that's what Robert ran into tonight.
He did. He did. He just tried to make too many fine pitches. And, you know, on the right-hand hitters, he tried to throw that sweeper and, you know, trying to throw it on the edge of the plate. That's a pitch. It's a great pitch. It's more of an east-west pitch. But you got to get that ball in. It has to be on the line, on the inside part of the plate. You leave that ball over the middle plate, and they're going to hit it. That's what Hernandez is. He got it over the middle of the plate. He was able to go down and get it and sweep and hit the ball at a ballpark. So it's just a matter of sometimes you try to make that pitch. You're too fine with it. And I think you agree with me. Sometimes you go 0-2, you're too fine, that's where you're going to get hit. You're going to get hurt. And with a team like this, like the Dodgers, boy, they're going to hurt you.
And to Roberts' credit, he got Teoscar on the good version of the sweeper.
That's
Just look at the difference of the sweeper where he made him look silly back in the second inning, and then the hanging sweeper he threw there in the fourth inning that hit over the wall. I mean, it's a hanging slider. It's supposed to be punished, and it barely stayed fair, but it did nonetheless. And, you know, you look at Roberts' total line today. Of the four walks he allowed, only one of them scored, but yet you're playing with fire when you're playing against a team like the Dodgers, right? You can live with walking Freddie Freeman in the first inning with two outs and nobody aboard, but then to have your first out of the inning there in the fourth and then walk Kyle Tucker, so putting runners on first and second, and now you're facing the bottom third of the order, got ahead of Teo 0-2, didn't finish the job, and then Robert, he allowed another walk to Freddie Freeman in the fifth inning. Freddie had a really good night tonight, but when I look at Robert overall today, too many deep counts, a lot of nibbling, a lot of trying to get that sweeper as big as possible, because it was his Achilles heel on Sunday against the Twins. I thought the cutter was super effective for Robert tonight, but the Dodgers caught on to the fact that aside from the cutter, he didn't really have anything else working for him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think sometimes when you talked about the cutter, which I thought was his better pitch tonight. I thought when he threw that cutter on the inside part of plate, got it down in the inner half, the Dodgers weren't able to handle that. But then he tried to throw the sweeper in the same spot, maybe a back leg sweeper or something like that. It's too big, and they kind of make a mistake. That pitch is almost, you try to throw a sweeper, and I thought he had success when he'd use it on the outer half, when he made people reach for it. I think that sweeper is a good pitch to a right-hand hitter when you can get him to reach, and now you go back in and go back foot sweeper or throw the cutter on the inside part of the plate. But it looks like when he did that, he was successful, but he got in the counts, like you just said, 1-2, 0-2, and then he made that mistake over the middle plate, and that really hurt him.
You know, when I look at what the Brewers have, you know, otherwise from this game to learn from and to move on from, you know, we can talk about the long eighth inning as well, but I mean, it all just adds up. I know Grant had a scoreless couple of innings, but even yet he had three full counts in that stretch and another walk in there, and he got out of it with a double play ball. D.L. Hall, to come back out there for the eighth inning in a one-run game, I mean, we all knew the situation was, all right, McGill comes in if the Brewers had tied it there on the bottom of the seventh. D.L. would continue in a one-run game, and he felt fine about that. But to walk the first two batters of the eighth and Pajes on four pitches, that's when the alarm bells start to sound, because now D.L. Hall has 19 walks in 24 innings this season. It's the only thing holding him back right now. And, you know, we can be the bleacher creatures, just shout, throw strikes! Like, if it was that easy, everybody would do it. But how do you fix a guy with that many walks, given the stuff is kind of all over the place right now for DL?
He just seemed, you know, I don't know if he tries to be too fine early in counts. I think sometimes you get out there and you want to make that perfect pitch early. You want to get that out early, so you're trying to make that perfect pitch. And it seems like DL gets out there and he gets behind because he's trying to make that perfect pitch. Yeah, the ball once in a while get away. You see the fastball get up and away. He's a little bit rushed with his delivery. But it just seems that he tries so hard to be so fine. And then when he gets that, he goes back to his breaking or something, and he gets people out, but he's going deep into counts. But this is a team, this Dodger team, what I thought tonight when you talk about the 11 walks and the at-bats with deep into counts, you can't do that to a team like this. That means what? They're going to turn the lineup over, and the more this team turns the lineup over, the scarier they get, and I think that's what happened tonight.
I think with what the Brewers rolled out there tonight, understanding that once DL lost control of this game, and they handed the ball to Jake Woodford. And I know folks are probably going to have takes about Jake Woodford tonight. And it's always the worst spot on the totem pole to be in the role that Jake Woodford is in right now. But it's especially bad when it goes as poorly as it did tonight. And you got kids that are hungry down in AAA that want to get back up here. I mean, I wonder what the Brewers are thinking now, because this is the last couple of outings now for Jake Woodford. It's gone like this. They've worked on this splitter. They've worked on this cutter. But, you know, he was here to be depth, and, you know, if you can't keep it to a 5-3 game and all of a sudden it becomes an 11-3 game, a conversation's probably to be had.
Well, you know, you look at the conversation that the times that he gets to pitch. He's pitched quite a bit lately. It seems like he's been in several games, but he's in a situation where you're not going to get in a lot of games. And usually those guys are here to do one thing, to come in the game, keep it where it's at. And when that happens, when you don't get in, you don't have success for time, sometimes you'll do with a guy like that is you'll send him down and let him get some regular work. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's better for that kid. He might not feel like it because he wants to be in the big leagues, but that number one thing of getting down and pitching on a consistent basis gets you back to where you need to be. And I think, you know, that it's not maybe what they're going to do with him, but that's a situation where he needs to pitch and pitch on a consistent basis.
Yeah, I mean, he's out of options, so the Brewers wouldn't be able to send him to AAA right. without having him clear waivers first. So it's a very tough decision looming for the Brewers. We're going to take our first break of the program. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. Again, 855-616-1620. Dale, I see you on the line. I'll get to you on the other side of the break as the Brewers fall 11-3 to the Dodgers here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Welcome back. Brewers fall today. Rubber match tomorrow for Sunday Fun Day on this holiday weekend. Should be a packed house. Maybe the roof will be open. Should be a little bit warmer as well and get these offense going in the right direction. With Jerry Augustine, I'm Dom Catronio. Brewers fall today 11-3 to the Dodgers. And, well, it was a closer game. It was not a laugher until the very end of this one. But before we go any further, do want to get to a caller waiting on the line patiently. Dale from Oak Creek. Dale, you're live here on Brewers Extra Innings.
Hey, Dom. So I saw the Brewers game, and the Brewers have not been doing that bad lately. They have been winning games lately, too. But today, I think it was the pitching. And I don't know who messed up on the pitching today. But if we win the series tomorrow, that would be awesome, too. But if we keep winning games, we might win a World Series this year, or we might not. But depends. And Murphy, I hope he doesn't let all the players like walk every time, make all the players walk every time, and yeah.
If it was that easy, if Murph knew that magic button, Dale, I think he would have hit it. He would have been smashing it in that eighth inning. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Dale, about the pitching tonight. Appreciate the call. That was the Achilles heel for the Brewers. But we also got to talk about the offense. The offense is not innocent in all of this either.
You're right.
Only scoring three runs, all three in the first inning. The big situation that popped out to me was the fifth inning, actually. Not just, and we'll talk about Gary in the first, but the fifth inning, it's still a one-run game. Roki's going back out for his third time through the order. The Brewers only had the double from Churio as the only hit the second time through against Roki.
Yeah.
But he really found something with his slider tonight. It was not so reliant on the splitter. It was really fastball slider tonight that really made Roki work. And the fact that he did not mess around with Churio and Terang, striking both of them out on the third time through, that would have been the inning that if you're going to create something, the pitch count was rising, the bullpen was active, and the Brewers didn't even get a base runner. They let Roki off the hook after that first inning.
They sure did, and you know, it just seemed like he was trying to find his splitter, and he just couldn't find it after that first inning. And it seemed like their approach was so good in that first inning, scoring the three runs and being like they did. But it just seemed after that he started to use that fastball and locating that fastball in different spots. And it seemed like he added a little bit when he needed to, a little bit more. But that slider was a better pitch for him tonight. He didn't have that split finger that he usually has, and when he got away with it, it just seemed like that fastball set up his breaking ball, and he was much better.
When you look at the first inning, though, and even Churio's first two at-bats as well, but to get a couple of doubles and then the good fortune of the throwing error by Roki himself, each of the first five reaching base, but then Bauer strikes out on a nine-pitch battle, which, hey, nine-pitch battle, it is what it is. His on-base streak comes to an end tonight. But Frelick's single was a big moment to get a two-strike single to keep that inning going. He's at 35 pitches, and look, Gary, I know you're excited to be back in the lineup. You're not that fast. You're not that speedy. And I think he would realize he was being a little over-aggressive there, trying to go first to third on a ball deflected in the shallow center field. Because that changed, honestly, you can argue that changed the whole game, him getting thrown out at third base.
It was huge. I think when you look at certain time, you look at certain plays that change a game, I thought that was huge. I thought they had something started there, something going. And just being aggressive, that's the way the Brewers are. They're going to be aggressive, but I think that you got to really understand the situation and who's in that position. And I thought just trying to take that extra base was a little too much right there.
And he was, you know, going with two strikes. He was able to see the swing and go with two outs.
Yeah.
But again, that ball was hit decently well by Sal, and it got through Mookie Betts, and Páez throws him out. Páez has a great throwing arm as well. I understand both, you know, saying, oh, force him to make the play. And also, I want to officially kill the cliche that is, oh, you don't want to make the first or the last out at third base. No, you just don't want to make it out of third base.
Like, That's right.
You just don't want to make it out of third base. And I think that the way that that inning was rolling, again, if you just stop at second base, easy to say in hindsight, you just stop at second base, you got first and second, two outs, 35 pitches deep for Roque. And by the way, we talked about it briefly yesterday, Joey's been drawing walks, and he drew another walk tonight. That was later in the game. But Joey's been drawing walks. He's been working good at bats. That could have been a 40-pitch inning for Roque.
He was fighting pitches off, and I think you anytime you can extend a pitcher, I think that's so worth it. Now, when you get in the lineup, you know, I know it's aggressive, and I know you want to get to third base and all that, but anytime that you can extend the pitcher to have to face another hitter, it's a positive thing. And you're right. Joey has really been having pretty good at bats as far as going deeper into counts, trying to fight things off, trying to do things. But it's the extra pitches that he would have to throw. And you never know. You might get that pitch that he get to drive the ball the other way and get a score run off of that. But that was a time where decision could have helped our ball club.
When I look at the other opportunity the Brewers had, when it was still a one-run game in the seventh inning, a leadoff, well, they had back-to-back innings with leadoff walks. They didn't get Yelich to move off of first in the sixth. And then in the seventh, Joey Ortiz draws a leadoff walk. A sacrifice bunt by David Hamilton. You know, he almost beat it out, but that's part of his job. I'm totally fine with it, playing for a run with the top of the order coming up.
That's right.
And Churio, he saw three consecutive changeups. He spit on one, he swung on, missed at another, and then fouled the next one off and chased a fastball at his eyes. You know, I mean, sometimes you're reminded he still is a 22-year-old sometimes, but he still gets a little over-aggressive. And, you know, the Dodgers bullpen right now is on quite the streak. 36 consecutive scoreless innings right now. It's a franchise record. Kyle Hurt has been the story of the National League bullpen, in my opinion. He's got a sub-1 ERA. He's only allowed one earned run coming off Tommy John surgery. That changeup was disgusting. So much so that, you know, they wanted to intentionally walk Bryce Durang to get the right on right with Andrew Vaughn, who ultimately grounded out. That was certainly an opportunity the Brewers could have had. Otherwise, an infield hit from Gary Sanchez in the eighth was the only other hit beyond the second inning in today's game. That just ain't going
to
cut it.
Well, I tell you, you got to give, sometimes when you give credit to a bullpen, you look at the 36 scoreless innings. They were aggressive. You know, usually we've seen that the Dodgers early in the season are kind of struggling with their bullpen and trying to find out what's going on. I'll tell you what, they got a bullpen that's set now. And you don't see that a lot. It's a lot like the Brewer bullpen. You take these two bullpens, you put them side by side. They're a lot alike because they got some really good arms. Guys who locate don't walk people. The one thing they do, they come in, they throw strikes. They get ahead of hitters. And that's the key, and the Dodgers are doing that right now. And they're having a lot of their success has to do because this bullpen is throwing the ball so well.
They have been the stabilizing force, even with Edwin Diaz on the injured list and all the other starters they have on their injured list. Let's do a little buy or sell, but first I want to thank our friends at Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. With summer temperatures on the way, it is the unofficial start of summer, of course, this weekend, with Memorial Day weekend. Make sure your AC is ready to go. They are offering $25 off AC tune-ups now through the end of May. So you do got to hurry. You don't want to get caught without a working AC when you need it most. Appointments are filling fast, so act now at Sider.com. That's Sider.com before it's too late. But up next, you know, let's talk about stealing grips, stealing signs, and that was a big topic of discussion in today's post game with Pat Murphy. Back with more in a moment on 620 WTMJ. Not many texts tonight, understandably so. Better ways to spend your holiday weekend than watching your favorite team fall 11-3. I hate walks. That one from Doug. Yeah, me too. Can't hold the Dodgers down forever, but the nibbling won't work. Can't show fear against them. Be aggressive. I like it. Good stuff there from Doug. Brewers, yep, that is the story of today's game. Was not their best with the command. They got off to a 3-0 lead. Then the Dodgers scored 11 unanswered, and that is all she wrote. Now, something that Pat Murphy talked about post-game, Jerry, is when Robert Gasser was on the mound and Andy Páez was on second, he was not so subtly trying to relay a signal to his batter at the plate. Now, I want to be very, very clear as we jump into this discussion that is nuanced and has a lot of baseball tradition involved in this, and you have dealt with this firsthand. This is 100% legal. 100% legal. Is it annoying? Yes.
Yes.
Do you need to protect against it? Also, yes.
Yes.
The reason why this is different from, say, the Astros is the Astros used electronics. They used a camera. Yeah. They used a system. Like, that's going too far. When it's a man on second using a skill that he has learned and he has been scouted or tipped off to say, hey, maybe his elbow is a little higher when he's throwing a sweeper. Maybe he's a little bit lower when he's throwing a fastball. Or you can literally see into the glove. You know, Robert was doing a good job trying to hold his hands to his chest, but you can't always be perfect. And then a signal goes to the batter, and they may know what it is. I want to be very, 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 very clear. Brewers do this too. This is 100% legal. I don't know if it's the only reason Robert did not have success in the fourth inning, but it's something to monitor and something to talk about what went wrong.
It's something to look at. I think you look at it in two areas when you say Pagas was on second base looking at two things. Number one, looking at the pitcher, where his hand position is. Sometimes they change your gloves for a cutter or a slider compared to a fastball or a split finger. That can happen in a glove. It can happen where they position their glove. It's high above the waist, low below the waist, whatever. But it also can go with the catcher. The catcher can give a sign, and there's some catchers the way they set up. And Sanchez sets up with his elbow out. So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll give the sign, check in, and he might go set the glove on the inside part of the plate and really wants that ball on the outside. So he'll go outside and set up inside, but he wants that ball aside. Gasser knows that where he goes with that glove first is where he wants that pitch. And a lot of teams, they'll pick that up. Location of pitch sometimes is as good as getting the pitch itself because you're looking in an area. So if a guy calls, he might call and put the glove up high and then go down here. He wants the ball up high. Whatever that tendency for that catcher is, and they study that. Teams study it, players study it, and if there's a tendency, they're going to figure it out. And I'll guarantee you, if there's a tendency with any the Brewer catchers or the pitchers, they're going to find it.
When it comes to what makes what are the fine edges that great teams differentiate themselves, and I'm not just talking payroll or the quality of players. You know, if it was the same team, where can you get edges? And just knowing what pitch is coming, it changes everything. Or just knowing a location changes everything. You'll see William try to deke out hitters where he'll, like, kick his leg near a right-handed batter. And, you know, you'll feel some dirt kicking around, then the pitch is down and outside. I mean, this game is all built on deception. I mean, everything about this is meant to, you know, try to keep you off your kilter. Now, one thing that would be different, though, from when you played versus now is that if somebody was relaying signs at second base and you catch on to it, next guy, that guy's up, where's he getting that next pitch?
Probably somewhere in the location of his body.
Exactly. Now, that's
or
not happening anymore.
Now, no, they don't do that.
I think that there is a line or a discussion to be had that, hey, you can't steal my signs, I'm going to hit you in the ribs. That was your thing. And some people think that's blunt and that's poor taste, you're risking injury every time you play baseball. I don't buy that. But there's got to be a way to mitigate it aside from, oh, get better grips or get better sound. Like, I don't want to sit here and encourage guys to throw at players. That's not what I'm doing. But I don't know what the downside is because the players are protected these days. Of course they're going to tell everything because they know they're not going to have anything happen to them.
I think back then if they were doing it on a occasion, they would go at you pretty good. And they might throw in right at you. They might hit a guy. That happened from time to time. But still, I think, Dom, what happens, if there's a tendency, whether it's from the pitcher or from the catcher, and they're getting that tendency, what you're going to do, we call it buzz the tower.
Yeah.
You're going to knock that guy off the plate just to say, hey, I might set up where they're thinking outside, and boy, you're going to go right back up under his elbows, and you're going to say, hey, that's going to open the door to say, hey, you know what? We got to relook at this just a little bit. You just want to reset everything, and that happens from time to time. I think it happens in baseball on a daily basis that everybody's just making sure, and we do that with pitchers in their delivery or the catchers, how they set up.
I think that one of the ways that baseball had to react to the Astros and to everything that went down in 2017 and the investigation and then 2020 and that sort of thing, they knew there was going to be retaliation against the Astros for exchanging their testimony in exchange for immunity. And when you look at what the Astros went through in 2020 and 2021, I look at Carlos Correa, how much he got thrown at. Bregman got thrown at a few times.
Yes.
And
yeah.
There's only so much baseball could do when you let the guys handle it in their own hands. I think about, you know, sometimes you got to let the players police themselves, and I think your generation of player was allowed to do that.
Yep.
Nowadays, the umpires are made it very, very clear. They are the final authority. They can throw you out without prior cause.
That's
they
right.
can throw you out. If they even sniff that was on purpose, you're gone. They can give warnings. So I can understand why it doesn't happen in today's game, but I just wonder if there's a way to create a better environment for the competitive balance of, oh, you're stealing my signs? There's got to be a consequence on the other side of you stealing your signs, or get better signs, get better grips. So there's always these, you know, back and forth. Well, what do you actually want? Because, again, I am not saying throw at a guy's ribs. I'm not saying that in the slightest. But there's got to be some sort of risk to relaying signs to your batter.
Well, I think the big thing is, I think they do it in baseball today, and how they do it is how, if you do have a steal sign, you can't be at second base and they can't watch you and say, hey, we know what you're doing out there.
Right. I think of Pajas tonight. I think of Jazz Chisholm with the
Yankees. I agree. I agree. You can't be doing that. That's going to, you know, you're setting up for a problem.
Right.
But I think a lot of teams it might be just a touch, but easier. Something that you do naturally if you do it. You know, they'll say, hey, if I get on second base, I see something, I might put my hands together like this, or whatever it might be. If you're out there and you're be as noticeable as what he was today, was he trying to do? Yeah, he was trying to do something.
Yep.
He's trying to help his teammate out. That's what you're trying to do. But I think there's different ways you go about it and different ways you should go about it. How they would handle that, I have no idea.
It's a very interesting topic for baseball right now, and baseball lifers like you and me like don't want it to change.
No.
I want you to still like it's a skill. Not everybody has
absolutely.
That skill.
Absolutely,
and it's an advantage. Tomorrow. Great matchup for a rubber game. Brandon Sproat, he's been trending upwards. They haven't really given him the full length of the leash yet, but they've got a fresh bullpen behind him tomorrow. And Yoshinobu Yamamoto, last time he was here, it was a complete game against the Brewers in Game 2 of the NLCS. He's been mixed bag this season. He hasn't been unhittable like a lot of people thought he would be coming off that World Series. And the last time he pitched here in the regular season was Andrew Vaughn's first game as a Brewer. And we all know how that first inning went for Yamamoto, knocking him out with a 7-run first inning. So let's hope for more of that memory.
I would like that memory. That's a better memory for both of us tomorrow coming in. But, you know, it's proud. You got to look at what he's doing. He's trying to develop himself, and he's trying to find the pitches that he feels very comfortable. I think each of his last several outings, he's gotten better and better. And he's the kind of guy that you say, where are you now? Where are you going to be? I think the future is going to be so bright for this young man. He's got that great fastball. He's starting to get that cutter down a little bit, getting away maybe for a lot of breaking balls. But so we have a great pitching matchup tomorrow. It's going to be fun to watch, and it's going to be interesting how this series go. The Brewers want to win a series. What not better to do it against the Dodgers?
Let's try to see if they can keep this stretch of unbeaten series going. They're 5-0-1 in their last six series. And a rubber match coming tomorrow. Jerry Augustine, we'll be talking about it with you tomorrow, and looking forward to it.
It's going to be a great day. It's going to be a fun matchup, and we're going to have some fun.
Fantastic. Jerry joining us here on the program. That's our buy or sell, talking about what's going on with the sign stealing. It's brought to you by Tony Wendorf & Associates. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, trust Tony Wendorf & Associates. It's one of the top real estate teams in Wisconsin, empowered by Keller Williams. They bring faith, family, and a red carpet experience to every home deal. Step up to the plate with a winning team behind you. WendorfTeam.kw.com. Take a lap around the league. We haven't done that in a while. That's coming up on the other side of the break on 620 WTMJ. Welcome back, Dom Catronio. Before we go to the out-of-town scoreboard, give you our player of the game. It's brought to you by International Autos Group. Just like the game's MVP, you can drive into summer in style and save up to $15,000 on select in-stock models. Visit iamilwaukee.com, International Autos, where ordinary needs to be extraordinary. You know, offensively for the Brewers, it could be Churio, two hits for him. Could be Terang, on base three times. Pitching-wise, I mean, Grant Anderson was the only one that had a decent line today. But on the other side, I mean, it's got to be Freddie Freeman or Teoscar Hernandez. Six RBIs for Teo. Freeman on base five times. Pretty easy pick for the opponent. Now, as we take a lap around the league, there was a couple games postponed today in the AL East. And we always say you're not allowed to look at the standings until Memorial Day, right? And we're almost there right now. So I'll go ahead and break my personal rule to look at the American League standings right now. Did you know that the Tampa Bay Rays are 34-15 and currently 5.5 games up on the New York Yankees? And quick, who do you think's in last place in the AL East after everything you've heard right now, after all the doom and gloom? No, the Baltimore Orioles are in last place in the AL East. Yeah, everyone's winning the offseason pick. Well, they didn't really get a lot of pitching. So it's interesting to look at what's going on over in the American League. They are starting to get a few more teams above 500. The AL West is still a mess. I'm going to be completely honest. I'm going to be vulnerable with you, the listener. As somebody who loves baseball, who's somebody who's worked in baseball my whole life, I can't tell you a lot about the Texas Rangers right now. I don't know why they're 24-26. Jacob DeGrom got beat up a little bit yesterday. That Nathaniel, the Mackenzie Gore trade is an interesting one. Jock Peterson has not been a great fit. Evan Carter, waiting for him to develop. That's all I got. The Astros are still technically in it. And they've just won the series in Chicago earlier today on the out-of-town scoreboard here. 3-0 for the Astros today over the Cubs. They continue to free fall. I saw an interesting note. You know, if the Cubs had played just 500 ball during both of those 10-game winning streaks, let's say instead of 20-0, that becomes 10-10. Well, they right now, if that was a 500 stretch, which is average, they would be 19-33, which would be the second worst record in baseball. Yikes. It's a little odd. Are they a little 1987-ish, a little team streakish, where a long winning streak at the beginning and then a long losing streak after, whatever it may be? But then the other thing I want to point out about the National League here, the Phillies are on fire. The Phillies continue to play great baseball. Now, since Don Mattingly took over, they lost only their sixth game tonight. They're 14-6 since Don Mattingly took over. They're 26-26. Now, Atlanta is running away with the East, and I imagine that will continue. They're 9.5 games up. But if the playoffs started tomorrow, which they don't because we're only 50 or so games into this season, San Diego will be the number one wild card. St. Louis and Chicago would be the 2 and the 3, with Arizona and Cincinnati 2 games back. And then you've got Philadelphia, and then you've got Pittsburgh, and then you've got Washington. You still got to go way down to see the New York Mets. And I want to address something. I'll talk about this more on the pregame tomorrow, but the other thing we got to mention about Detroit, with Tarek Skubal throwing bullpens on his way back from the nano needle procedure. They've lost 7 games in a row. They were postponed today due to rain in Baltimore. Would they trade Skubal? Would they trade some of their pieces? First of all, I think the answer is maybe. Would they even trade him? And for folks who are thinking the Brewers are going to go after Tarek Skubal when pitching is not the problem, they're not going to go after Tarek Skubal. And furthermore, you got to keep it in perspective. The CC Sabathia trade had a little more baggage attached to it, trying to break the playoff drought since 82. Okay? They felt like that was the team to do it for. They knew they weren't going to re-sign CC. They know they're not going to re-sign Tarek Skubal. Skubal's got a little bit larger price tag for the prorated salary for the rest of the season. I do not think the Brewers are going to trade for Tarek Skubal. Let's put that to bed here on May 23rd. Make sense? Cool. We do not have Pat Murphy sound, but I'll play a clip of it, and we'll talk about it a little bit more about the whole pitch tipping thing coming up in a moment as we're going to the top of the hour. A couple of highlights to play as well. Brewers fall today 11-3. Wasn't pretty, but it's one of them nights. Mama said there'd be days like this. No big deal. Rubber match tomorrow. Back after this on 620 WTMJ. Not a fun game. Get after it tomorrow. We're on the air at noon tomorrow. 1:10 first pitch. Brewers warm-up, Sunday with the staff. Scheduled to have Chris Hook join the program tomorrow. And then get ready for a finale with the Dodgers. The homestand continues another day game Monday for Memorial Day. Cardinals, Dollar Dogs. How about that? Night game Tuesday, day game Wednesday. So the clock's going to be all out of sorts for you this week. Now, I wanted to play this since we talked about the pitch tipping and all that stuff. Here's a little bit of what Pat Murphy had to say about everything that goes into relaying signs and grips and that sort of thing.
Better than his previous outing. You know, he's facing a real potent lineup. and I thought he did a really nice job. I mean, there's some things to work on. Obviously, the game today, there's a huge emphasis on making sure they can't get your signs from second base. You know what I mean? Like, there's a huge emphasis on that. And pitchers have to be able to not give away anything. It's gotten to a science. Every team does it. We do it. Every team does it. Some teams do them less subtle than others. But I think he got caught up and gave away some pitches that ended up hurting him. But you can't give up 0-2 hits either way. You can't throw 0-2 pitches down the middle. And again, I'm saying Gast did some really nice things today to keep it close. And then in the fourth inning, he gave up a couple 0-2 hits. There's a couple walks in there. And the home run on an 0-2 pitch in the middle of the plate. So those things can't happen. Now, also, if in fact he was tipping a little bit by having something in his glove or something that gave it away, teams are really good at it. Everybody studies it. We study it. Everybody does. So we don't come in here and tell you when we had pitches at second base. Oh, well, we had pitches today at second. That helped us, you know. So it was pretty evident that maybe they did at second base with the yes.
Absolutely.
Huh? Well, you can't. I mean, so when you go into your glove, for instance, if that was it, you know, if you go into your glove and you're used to gripping the ball a certain way, a certain timing, and maybe you flash a little bit, or maybe you have more of your wrists showing or something like that, that's they give a sign for. Maybe it's from your catcher. Maybe your catcher is moving too soon. Maybe your catcher sets up a little, your glove angle's a little different. We had pitches tonight on the Dodgers, little things they did. Glove angle on certain off-speed pitches compared to glove angle on fastball. So there's a relay system on how you get that, and then you got to think through that. Because you know the pitch doesn't mean you can hit the pitch, but it certainly helps you, especially if you're pretty confident. Now, the Cubs had pitches the other day, right? And that messed them up because they flashed some wrong ones in some key times in that eighth inning.
Yeah, it can go both ways. And I remember they had fooled Jazz Chisholm a couple of times when he was here with the Yankees. And there were some glares back out him to say, like, well, get it right if you're going to relay it. And so that's part of the risk as well, that you can deke a guy and get things going in the right direction. So not a full highlight segment, but there were a couple bright spots from this one. We'll relive some of that coming up next. As the show begins to wind down, Brewers fall 11-3 to the Dodgers on 620 WTMJ. You know, this game started fast for the Crew. They fall 11-3. Again, 11 unanswered for the Dodgers, because in the first inning, this was just a beautiful piece of hitting for Bryce Terang to open the scoring.
1-2 pitch. Line down the left field line. It's a fair ball. It's going to roll into the corner. Bounce off that sidewall. Churio around 30 is going to score. Trading places with him is Terang. He stands at second with an RBI double, and the Brewers, like they have seemingly for the last 2 weeks, jump out front right out of the gate.
How about it? I mean, it was just a beautiful little fillet, a little just a kiss down the left field line, and it was great. And then some good luck for the Crew. Swinging bunts, put the ball in play, good things happen, right?
1-2 pitch. Vaughn, a chopper left side. This is going to be trouble. Sasaki off the mound, bare hands it, throws to first, he threw it away. It goes into foul territory up that first baseline. Around third is Terang. He will score. Vaughn will be content with first. It is 2-0 Milwaukee here in the bottom of the first inning.
And the last highlight we'll play was the moment that the first inning really could have got off the rails if just Gary just stayed at second.
1-2 is a liner over the glove of Betts and into center field. Around third is Yelich. He's going to score. On his way to third is Sanchez, and he's out. Yelich scored before Sanchez was out.
It was a moment where I can understand the aggressiveness for Gary, but in hindsight, you wish he could have stayed at second. It was a good throw from Páez to get him. And that was it for the Brewers offense, unfortunately. They would only have two more hits the rest of the night, which was not the expectation going into the game. Given Roque's fastball, opponents were hitting over 350 against it, an OPS over 1,000. So he said, fine, I just won't throw my fastball in action counts. I'll use the slider and the splitter. And he had a very effective game plan against the Brewers today. I think that what the Brewers learned in this contest, and even last two nights, because last night after the second inning, they didn't score again either, that just because you have a good game plan once, it's your turn to make the adjustment back to the starter, and they will certainly need to do so tomorrow against Yoshinobu Yamamoto. We'll preview that series finale. The Brewers don't see the Dodgers for a minute after this series ends. We'll explain on that on the other side of the break as we get ready to say goodnight right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Final few minutes of the program. One more time on the air at noon tomorrow. We do have a post-game show, by the way, on Memorial Day. I will be with you for that, and a Brewers warm-up for that one, too. We work on the weekends. We work on the holidays. That's part of working in baseball today. We will also be sharing the Logan Henderson interview in this week's Brewers Weekly as well. Maybe I'll throw it on to one of the back ends of these podcasts. I'll make sure to share it on the social so everybody who wants to hear it can hear it, because he was fantastic earlier today if you missed it on Brewers Warm-Up. And like we said, we are scheduled to have Chris Hook join us for Sundays with the staff tomorrow for the finale of this series. The pitching matchup, Brandon Sproat for the Brewers up against Yoshinobu Yamamoto. When you look at what the Brewers bullpen have available, they certainly have Uribe available, they certainly have McGill available, they certainly have Ashby available. Will they go to Chad Patrick after just an inning in the third on Friday night? I would imagine they could. I would also imagine Grant Anderson is available again for a window of righties. I would imagine that the Brewers are getting excited at the thought of Jared Koenig returning soon. So a real quick injury update. They're probably going to give him one more live session before he goes down on a rehab assignment. Speaking of a lefty on a rehab assignment, Rob Zastrzyzny has been down in Nashville. He, in the words of Pat Murphy, has been walking a few too many guys. How relevant that turned out to be for today's game. But they are monitoring his workload as he continues to work his way back from an intercostal strain. He has walked one. It's better than Murphy even gave him credit for it. He's given up two hits, five and a third inning. So Rob could be back sooner as opposed to later. That will help out this bullpen too. In case you're wondering as well, how is Craig Yoho doing down there in AAA, given he's also on the 40-man roster? He's gotten back to normal after a slow start. 11 games, 13 innings, 15 Ks, and 5 walks for Yoho. A 140 opponent batting average and a 1.38 ERA. If you're thinking about if there's going to be a roster move tomorrow to try to get a fresh bullpen arm just in case, since Jake Woodford was used, D.L. Hall was used, in that sort of thing. But the Brewers are still in good shape. They are still one of the best teams in the National League, and tomorrow they get a rubber match to prove it against the Dodgers. And as we said, they are continuing this stretch of trying to stay unbeaten ever since that Cardinals series ended in a split at the start of the month. The Brewers continue to rack up series wins. This has been an impressive stretch of series wins, too. You go back, Arizona series win, Washington series win, Cardinals split, Yankees series win, Padres series win, Twins series win, Cubs sweep, and now trying to get a series win against the defending world champions. The winning streak in the regular season is over. It is snapped at 9. We all know what the postseason losing streak is right now at 5, or I should say, actually, it's 7 head-to-head against the Dodgers when you include 2020, which is tough for me to do, but hey, the Dodgers won the ring that year. It counts all the same. And now the Brewers get to deal with Yamamoto one more time here tomorrow, making yet another start in this ballpark. You know, it's funny. I was talking to some of the members of the Japanese media contingent who were on hand, obviously covering the show that is Roki and Yamamoto and some of the stars that are obviously overseas. Yeah, I ignored Shohei, of course, Shohei. But I was asking them about, you know, do they even have a knowledge? Does the Japanese baseball fan base have a knowledge of the Brewers? And I was very surprised to learn that they don't know the names, but the Brewers are known as an organization in Japan that play baseball the way they play over there. Fundamentals, not reliant on the home run, because right now they're in a dead ball era in Japanese professional baseball. Like, league average ERA is like 2.25 right now. So your defense and your base running and your bunting all becomes more important. So I thought that was pretty interesting that Japanese fans are fond of the way the Brewers play baseball. And, of course, they love the Miz because he cracks 165 kilometers an hour. Yeah, it's 100 miles an hour. You get my point. We will have plenty to talk about tomorrow. Let's hope for another victory. Our producer has been Matt Yazel. I'm Dom Catronio. Good night. We will talk to you tomorrow. Until then, keep on swinging.